page 270, on the fetish character in music and the regression of listening, by Theodore W. Adorno. Originally published in Zeitschrift für Sozialforschung, Volume Roman 7, 1938, this essay is still one of the most impressive examples of a sociology of art. In our context, we should stress 1. Adorno's almost explicit polemic against the thesis of Benjamin's work of art in the age of its mechanical reproductibility. 2. His striking utilization of Lukács' concept of reification to indicate the logic of the culture industry. And finally, 3. Adorno's own theory of structural listening and the decreasing chances of adequate aesthetic response in the age of the declining of the individual. Complaints about the decline of musical taste begin only a little later than mankind's twofold discovery. On the threshold of historical time, that music represents at once the immediate manifestation of impulse and the locus of its taming. It stirs up the dance of the maenads and sounds from Pan's bewitching flute, but it also rings out from the Orphic lyre around which the visions of violence range themselves pacified. Whenever their peace seems to be disturbed by bacchanalic agitation, there is talk of the decline of taste. But if the disciplining function of music has been handed down since Greek philosophy as a major good, then certainly the pressure to be permitted to obey musically as elsewhere is today more general than ever. Just as the current musical consciousness of the masses can scarcely be called Dionysian, so its latest changes have nothing to do with taste. Page 271. The concept of taste is itself outmoded. Responsible art adjusts itself to criteria which approximate judgments, the harmonious and the inharmonious, the correct and the incorrect, but otherwise no more choices are made. The question is no longer put, and no one demands the subjective justification of the conventions. The very existence of the subject who could verify such tastes has become as questionable as has at the opposite pole the right to a freedom of choice which empirically, in any case, no one any longer exercises. If one seeks to find out who likes a commercial piece, one cannot avoid the suspicion that liking and disliking are inappropriate to the situation. Even if the person questioned close his reaction in those words, the familiarity of the piece is a surrogate for the quality ascribed to it. To like it is almost the same thing as to recognize it. An approach in terms of value judgments has become a fiction for the person who finds himself hemmed in by standardized musical goods. He can either escape impotence nor decide between the offerings where everything is so completely identical that preference in fact depends merely on biographical details or on the situation in which things are heard. The categories of autonomously orientated art have no applicability to the contemporary reception of music, not even for that of the serious music domesticated under the barbarous name of classical so as to enable one to turn away from it again in comfort. It is objected that specifically light music and everything intended for the consumption have in any case never been experienced in terms of those categories. That must certainly be conceded. Nevertheless, such music is also affected by the change in that the entertainment, the pleasure, the enjoyment it promises is given only to be simultaneously denied. In one of his essays, Aldous Huxley has raised the question of who in a place of amusement is really being amused. At the same justice, it can be asked whom music for entertainment still entertains. Rather, it seems to complement the reduction of people to silence, the dying out of speech as expression, the inability to communicate at all. It inhabits the pockets of silence that develop between people molded by anxiety, work, and undemanding docility. Everywhere it takes over, unnoticed, the deadly sad role that fell to it in the time, in the specific situation of the silent films. It is perceived purely as background. If nobody can any longer speak, then certainly nobody can any longer listen. An American specialist in radio advertising, who indeed prefers to make use of the musical medium, has expressed skepticism as to the value of his advertising because people have learned to deny their attention to what they are hearing, even while listening to it. Page 272. His observation is questionable with respect to the advertising value of the music, but it tends to be right in terms of the reception of the music itself. In the conventional complaints about declining taste, certain motifs constantly recur. There is no lack of pouting and sentimental comments assessing the current musical condition of the masses as one of degeneration. The most tenacious of these motives is that of sensuality, which allegedly enfeebles and incapacitates heroic behavior. This complaint can already be found in Book Roman III of Plato's Republic, in which he bans the harmonies expressive of sorrow, as well as the soft harmonies suitable for drinking, without its being clear to this day why the philosopher ascribes these characteristics to the mixed Lydian, Bass Lydian, and Ionian modes. In the Platonic state, the measure of later Western music, which corresponds to the Ionian, would have been tabooed. The flute and the panharmonic stringed instruments also fall under the ban. The only modes to be left are warlike, to sound the note or accent which a brave man utters in the hour of danger and stern resolve, or when he faces injury, defeat, or death, or any other misfortune, with the same steadfast endurance. Plato's Republic is not the Utopia it is called by the official history of philosophy. It disciplines its citizens in terms of its existence and will to exist even in music, where the distinction made between soft and strong modes was by Plato's time already little more than a residue of the mustiest superstition. The Platonic irony reveals itself mischievously in jeering at the flute player Marsyas, flayed by the sober-sided Apollo. Plato's ethical musical program bears the character of an Attic purge in Spartan style. Other perennial themes of music sermonizing are on the same level. Among the most prominent of these are the charge of superficiality and that of a cult of personality. What is attacked is chiefly progress, social, essentially the specifically aesthetic. Intertwined with the forbidden allurements are sensual gaiety and differentiating consciousness. The predominance of the person over collective compulsion in music sparks the moment of subjective freedom which breaks through in later phases, while the profanation which frees it from its magic circle appears as superficiality. Thus, the lamented moments have entered into the great music of the West. Century stimulation as the gate of entry into the harmonic and eventually the coloristic dimensions. The brittled person as the bearer of expression and of the humanization of music itself, superficiality as a critique of the mute objectivity of forms in the sense of Haydn's choice of the gallant in preference to the learned. Haydn's choice, indeed, and not the recklessness of a singer with a golden throat or an instrumentalist of lip-smacking euphony. Page 273. For those moments entered into great music and were transformed in it, but great music did not dissolve into them. In the multiplicity of stimulus in expression, its greatness is shown as a force for synthesis. Not only does the musical synthesis preserve the unity of appearance and protect it from falling apart into diffuse culinary moments, but in such unity in the relation of particular moments to an evolving whole, there is also preserved the image of a social condition in which above those particular moments of happiness would be more than mere appearance. Until the end of prehistory, the musical balance between partial stimulus and totality, between expression and synthesis, between the surface and the underlying, remains as unstable as the moments of balance between supply and demand in the capitalist economy. The magic flute, in which the utopia of the Enlightenment and the pleasure of a light opera comic song precisely coincides, is a moment by itself. After the magic flute, it was never again possible to force serious and lighter music together. But what are emancipated from formal law are no longer the productive impulses which rebelled against conventions. Impulse, subjectivity, and profanation, the old adversaries of materialistic alienation, now succumb to it. In capitalist times, the traditional anti-mythological ferments of music conspire against freedom, as those allies they were once proscribed. The representatives of the opposition to the authoritarian schema becomes witnesses to the authority of commercial success. The delight in the moment and the gay facade becomes an excuse for absolving the listener from the thought of the whole whose claim is comprised in proper listening. The listener is converted along his line of least resistance into the acquiescent purchaser. No longer do the partial moments serve as a critique of that whole. Instead, they suspended the critique which the successful aesthetic totality exerts against the flawed one of society. The unitary synthesis is sacrificed to them. They no longer produce their own in place of the reified one, but show themselves complacent to it. The isolated moments of enjoyment prove compatible with the imminent constitution of the work of art, and whatever in the work goes beyond them to an essential perception, it sacrificed to them. They are not bad in themselves, but in their diversionary function. In the service of success, they renounce the subordinate character which was there. They conspire to come in terms with everything which the isolated moment can offer to an isolated individual who long ago ceased to be one. In isolation, the charms become dulled and furnished models of the familiar. Page 274. Whoever devotes himself to them is as malicious as the Greek thinkers once were taught Oriental sensuality. The seductive power of the charm survives only where the forces of denial are strongest. In the dissonance which rejects belief in the illusion of the existing harmony, the concept of the aesthetic is itself dialectical in music. If asceticism once struck down the claim of the aesthetic in a reactionary way, it has today become the sign of advanced art. not, to be sure, by an archaizing parsimony of means in which deficiency and poverty are manifested, but by the strict exclusion of all culinary delights which seek to be consumed immediately for their